If you want a literary taste of absolute faith, not to mention the cosmic struggle between good and evil, you could sample John Milton's epic poem, Paradise Lost.
The chief were those who, from the pit of hell, roaming to seek their prey on earth, durst fix their seats long after next the seat of God, their altars by his altar, gods adored among the nations round, and durst abide Jehovah thundering out of Zion, throned between the cherubim. Yea, often placed within his sanctuary itself their shrines, abominations, and with cursed things his holy rites and solemn feasts profaned, and with their darkness durst affront his light.
The language of Paradise Lost may be old-fashioned, but the message, according to Milton scholar Stanley Fish, is very contemporary. Fish is a renowned literary critic with a special flair for provocation. In his book, How Milton Works, he celebrates the uncompromising vision of the 17th century poet. Fish told Steve Paulson that Milton is the antidote to so much mushy thinking today.
I like anyone who's an absolutist and a dogmatist.
It's kind of an unpopular thing to say these days.
Even if the form of absolutism or dogmatism he or she is espousing is not mine. Because one of the things that I dislike about a great deal of thinking in the modern world is the emphasis on the awful complexity and the tragic many-sidedness of it all, and how we all must luxuriate in this sense of moral and political indeterminacy. I hate that kind of talk. And so did Milton.
So what is so appealing about this view of the world?
It's appealing because, first of all, Milton asserts this in the context of an absolute fierce conviction of his rightness, and he employs an extraordinary variety of scatological, metaphorical, and vituperative language, which is so inventive and exhilarating. For instance, in one of these prose tracts I was thinking of, he is accused by his polemical enemy, to whom he is responding, of being intemperate, invective, of being someone who uses vile words. And he says, I don't use any words that are not in the Bible. He says, God himself inveighs against anyone, and he quotes a biblical verse, who pisseth against the wall. And Milton says, should I be cleaner in my use of language than he who made the language? And then he says, besides, there is a sanctified bitterness in the service of the Lord. Now, of course, he accuses all of his enemies, who are themselves just as vehement, of not meaning it, of being insincere, of being vessels of perdition, and even worse. So there's a kind of grand zealotry and polemical fierceness, which for me is very attractive, again, given the anguished, liberal, squeamish posturing that we see so much of today.
Well, what I find so interesting about what you're saying is, if we were just to talk about literary reputations, mm-hmm. Milton seems so old-fashioned now, these kind of antiquated notions of good versus evil, as opposed to Shakespeare, who seems
right.
Very contemporary. There's a lot of ambiguity there.
Right,
you're not
absolutely.
Exactly sure what he's talking about. And most people love that about
that
Shakespeare.
That is right. And I think that's a very acute observation. And I've sometimes described the difference of reading the two authors by saying reading Milton is like being shot out of a cannon. Very narrow bore, but great velocity. And you either like that kind of thing, as I do, or you don't like it, as some people do. I'll give you one more Milton quote. As a political figure who was given the task by Cromwell of defending the execution of Charles I before the learned community of Europe, he was accused, along with the other regicides, of killing God's viceroy on earth. And Milton replies, this is not an exact quote, but it's close enough. He said, I am sure that the execution of Charles I maketh a most pleasing savor in the nostrils of God. Hmm. Now, that's the Milton that I think...
That's the Milton you love.
That's the Milton I love. And the Milton that a lot of Miltonists have been trying to make into a 17th century version of John Rawls or Richard Rorty. Hmm. That is, someone who is vaguely multicultural and postmodernist and tolerant of all kinds of points of view. And part of that has to do with a track like the Areopagitica, the great oration in favor of free speech. But what people sometimes forget is that three-quarters of the way through the Areopagitica, after urging freedom of expression and toleration in the most eloquent terms, Milton says, but of course, I didn't mean Catholics. Them we extirpate, which is a verb that means pull up by the roots. And so
Isn't there something objectionable about this?
Not though? At all. I don't think there's anything objectionable, because what Milton is saying, in fact, he gave a good reason why he was making this argument. Since the whole point for him of freedom of expression is to keep enough opinions going so that men and women could refine their sense of the true, and since, according to him, the Catholic Church was in fact a censorship machine, therefore preventing the good flow of opinions, the Catholic Church itself had to be censored so as to keep censorship at bay.
Now, you've argued that the greatness of Milton lies in his moral dogmatism, I guess
right. You
could say. I mean, that's why you prefer Milton to Shakespeare, who didn't have that.
Let's put it this way. It's not prefer. I am temperamentally drawn more to Milton than to Shakespeare. It would be absolutely foolish of me to make a judgment on Shakespeare. I mean, that's...
But anyway, there is a famous exception to what you're saying about Milton, the Romantic poets. When they read Paradise Lost, they read it as it was a celebration of Lucifer, of
that
Satan.
Is correct.
And
yeah.
William Blake famously said that Milton is of the devil's party without knowing it,
yes.
Because Lucifer was so much more of an interesting character
right.
than God.
Well, I think, first of all, the romantic critics who said those things have a distinguished roster of intellectual heirs in the 20th century. What I want to say about all of these is that they're wrong.
They're mistaken. To put it bluntly.
They're mistaken. But the reason that they're mistaken is, in my view, an interesting reason. They're quite right to say, or to see, that Satan is the more interesting character. He seems to have complex divisions inside him. He seems to be torn and conflicted. He seems to have a project which we recognize as the kind of quintessential Western American / Anglo-American project of setting up his own shop with his own laws, shaking off the tyranny of an overarching and suffocating father. And I think that's all correct as an observation, but I think Milton saw that too and identifies that substance or depth of character as exactly what's wrong with Satan.
Hmm.
Because for Milton, the only character that you should have is the character voiced by Milton's Jesus in Paradise Regained when he identifies himself with the following phrase, "Me hungering to do my Father's will."
Does John Milton still matter today? Is he still relevant?
Students are drawn to Milton and find reading him and engaging with him an athletic experience in the moral sense. And I've had more students after Milton courses tell me that their lives have been materially altered in some important way by this encounter.
Hmm.
And I once, when I taught a Milton course to 10 very bright young undergraduates in 1964, had a spectacular demonstration of this. At the end of them, three of the couples got married to one another they had never met before. And this was after spending 6 weeks reading Paradise Lost. I'm afraid I can't say that will be the effect of everyone's reading of Paradise Lost. And I'm afraid I can't say either that all of these people are still married to one another.
Stanley Fish is the Dean of Liberal Arts and Sciences at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He talked with Steve Paulson about his book, How Milton Works.